Hello, everyone. Before we get started with this episode, and my apologies if you just listened to the last episode and heard this, but the first time through, we didn't have my editorial comment added to the last episode. So we're putting this here for people who were kind of following along with us in real time and may not have heard that edit. We figure if we're wrong, let's be wrong out loud so that people can realize that we aren't perfect. And if we aren't, we're going to tell you because we'd like you to learn from us and learn from when we make a mistake so that you don't make the same mistake. So during the episode, David was talking about a runner from third touching home before some runnerless lane interference occurred. David had been umpiring an NFHS game at the time. I was a little confused about that during the episode, and that's why I had asked the questions the way that I did. But we had a listener named Carlos from Hawaii email us and point out that in the NCAA, that is not the rule. And so I had asked David, was that the same across sanctions? He said it was. But Carlos pointed out to us that in the rules on page 128 of the rule book, the effect for everything between 12-17-1-3 to 12-17-1-6 says that the ball is dead, the batter runner is out, and each base runner not put out prior to the interference must return to the last base occupied at the time of the pitch. So, which is different. So again, the NFHS says the penalty is the ball is dead and the runners must return to the last base touched at the time of the interference. So there is a difference there. David got it right while umpiring at the game, but was wrong when he was correcting my understanding during the episode, telling me that it kind of blanket applied and it didn't. So again, just want to throw our mea culpas out there and our shout out to Carlos from Hawaii for listening, appreciating us enough to correct us when we're wrong. That being said, enjoy this episode.
Welcome to the Umpiring Fast Pitch Softball Podcast. I'm David.
And I'm Pete. And today we are going to deal with a listener question. This was an email I received from an umpire, and I will read it to you, and then we'll discuss it. So it said, "Good morning, David and Pete. I'm a relatively brand new baby umpire from the south suburbs of Chicago. This is my first year as an NFHS IHSA licensed official, though my second season umpiring in general. I found your podcast a couple of days ago, and have already sped through listening to every episode. I greatly appreciate the perspective you both offer and look forward to more episodes. I have a question about one of the situations David talked about regarding a player that is known for getting hit by pitches. Though I wish every single player in the history of sports was an honest and well-intentioned athlete, that just isn't the case in the real world. As I get to know these teams I'm scheduled to see over and over again this season, how do I stay unbiased when a known dirty or dishonest player continues to engage in behavior that could be interpreted as simply creative abuse of game mechanics more so than a malicious or unsportsmanlike act? For instance, if a player is known to get on base over and over again because she purposely loosens her jersey so it gets grazed by a pitch, is there a point when we as the officials finally say we aren't going to reward that behavior and give a warning or even an ejection? Or do we just keep it to ourselves and enforce the rule as written, letting her get on base every time, because how do we actually prove intent? As an athlete myself, this kind of behavior really grinds my gears, and it's difficult to let go when I see it happening. So what do we do to keep the game fair and fun for the girls? Thank you for humoring me. Hope everyone has a great season. Jessica." So one of the things I pointed out, Jessica, first, you know, thanks for listening. Thanks for binging. My family has not listened. Well, it's not my entire family. I do have a segment of the family has listened to more than one episode. But I can't get, like, my wife has never heard an episode, you know, so of the podcast. So the fact that
it's pretty boring stuff for non-umpire people.
She binged through. My daughter's boyfriend, though, listened to several episodes. He doesn't even softball. So that's, you know, I do have some people close to me that have listened. We're not that far. But so, this is great. This is great. And I appreciate the feedback. I appreciate the long thought out email here and describing a situation that is fun to talk about, because I bet there are some people that work and I don't know. It is kind of hard sometimes maybe to not get a bias or a grudge built up against people that are treating you a certain way or acting a certain way or sportsmaning a certain way.
Yeah, for sure. I would like to give some kudos out to the well-formulated email. In order for me to write that well, I have to use ChatGPT. So
we don't know she didn't.
Well, I guess that's true. But no, so very well thought out. Great questions. And it actually comes from a place here for us as well. Again, tooting our own horn. Why do we do it? We do it so that they have a fair contest, right? And so if we are identifying something that we know is not going to be fair and it's not going to be fair on purpose, mm-hmm. do we really want to reward that behavior and that kind of thing? So difficult situation for a new umpire. Experienced umpires, I would hope, would all give the exact same advice. And Pete, you gave some advice.
Yeah.
And so what was that advice?
What I told her was, I said, that I vote that you keep it to yourself and enforce the rules as written. You mentioned the jersey being loose. It is on us to ensure that the uniforms meet the uniform requirements and that everything is being worn in quote properly and as designed by the manufacturer, which is 185 in NFHS, and that uniforms meet what is in section 3.2. However, we can't over umpire. If someone wears their jersey more loosely tucked and that allows a hit by pitch, then we must allow it because of rule 7.3.2. It isn't a 100% highly ethical behavior by the player, but we can't judge those things. No matter what the rule, people are going to find the areas where they can skate between. I chalk it up there with waggling the bat in the zone, and then I give some examples where some people are complaining about that on the Softball Zone forum. But in order to live with myself about that kind of behavior, remember what had to go wrong to get to that point. The pitcher threw a ball not in the zone and completely in the box. NFHS doesn't require an attempt to get out of the way, so the rule set itself is a little more offense-friendly as opposed to an organization like USA Softball where an attempt to get out of the way is required. If the pitcher threw the ball not completely in the box and it hit that loose clothing, then it's just a dead ball and you call it where it was. No base given. Remembering that also, if they move intentionally to get hit, it's also only a dead ball ball. So if they're looking to scooting around trying to catch a piece of loose jersey, we can't kick them out. But we can leave them right in the box with only an additional ball added to the count. But standing still or even making some evasive maneuver that results in the ball still catching a baggy top, tough luck on the defense, throw more strikes. Yeah. So if those small things may have a 1% or 2% advantage here and there, they probably won't add up much over the season, and proper calling of the game will have a much larger outcome on the game.
Yeah, for sure. So great advice, and that's exactly what I was hoping that, you know, all of our experienced umpires would do. Try to very hard to remain unbiased. You have no idea about that player. The player's home life, the player, you know, how they are as a person, how
body image. Are they wearing their jersey loose because, yeah, you know, they don't like how they look? Do they feel bloated today? Or is it, yeah, you know, they think it looks cooler to be baggy versus tight? You don't know. Yeah.
Yeah. We don't have any idea. And so while we're there to make sure there's a fair contest, I think you need to do that within the rules and just try really hard to be unbiased. It's one of the most difficult things. You see this in the legal profession, you know, judges, and we don't do politics here on the thing, but you know, it's in the news right now where we have politically charged justices, you know, mm-hmm, that have allowed their political feelings to move into their courtroom and make decisions, you know, based on their politics. It's like, that's you can't do that. Those guys and gals make lots and lots of money and are supposed to be held to the highest of standards. I would hold umpires to an even higher one than that says, no, the rules are here. Mm-hmm. You have to do it. And actually, before I'm going to sidebar here for just a quick second and get off of the actual email itself. But somebody said something the other day to me that said, well, it was actually Stoney was talking about it in one of his Facebook posts to say, I need to know how to prepare my girls, you know, as a coach. I need to know how to prepare my girls. So I need the umpires to be consistent.
Yeah.
In the enforcement of the rules. And that's 100% true statement. It's like, Stoney, yes, absolutely. Kudos to you. And we can provide that to you. We actually can. The umpire world can provide that to the coaches for the girls if and only if every umpire enforces every rule as it's written and follows the mechanics manual as it's written. If we all do that, we will provide a consistent product for the coaches and the girls to make sure that there's a fair contest.
I mean, that's the ideal. We kind of have that in, you know, I've mentioned before that I work in the technology space. And so there is this ideal there that if your organization has coding standards and people code a certain way and with certain thinking, you should not be able to distinguish who wrote what lines of code, right? And so carrying that over here, I feel like if you have umpires who follow the manual and enforce the rules fairly and correctly, it should not matter. I should be able to swap out every pitch between David and Pete and Frosty and Linda and over, just switch all these umpires and you would never know that we changed because the strike zone didn't change, because the enforcement of interference and obstruction didn't change, and the enforcement of or over-enforcement of rules like uniform rules or something didn't happen.
Yep, exactly. So, you know, I think great question from a new umpire. Hopefully mm-hmm. that, you know, your words were well-received and understood, and I'm certain that they were, you know, given the responses that we got. So I think she even did respond and say,
she did.
Thanks for the, yep. So fantastic. Keep them coming.
She said she found this particularly helpful to think about the fact that I pointed out what the pitcher had to do wrong in order for that to happen. You could wear your jersey with, you know, puffy everything under it. You could blow it up and wear a floaty around your waist. As long as the pitcher throws the ball in the strike zone, it doesn't matter. The fact that she threw it clear in the batter's box.
Yeah, that's a problem. Yeah, throw more strikes. Yeah, I'm certain that was Casey's response to that too. My daughter Casey would respond the same way. She probably shouldn't throw the ball in the batter's box. The pitcher should probably throw more strikes. So what else for new umpires? I'll tell you, I had a very scary one come across the I didn't have it. The interwebs had it. So the group had this very scary video come across where a plate umpire had taken the first pitch of the game with no mask on. Mm-hmm. And the first pitch was fouled back and hit him right in the face.
Yeah.
And did not have his mask on. And so who knows the reality of the situation. I know that some of the comments in there were, you know, he's fine now, which is good.
Yeah.
So fantastic. But some people were like, well, you know, he set his mask at the fence, you know, for the plate meeting. Mm-hmm. And then after the plate meeting was over, just, I don't know, there's a lot to do. You know, if you're keeping lineup cards, you know, you got to get those situated in your lineup card holder. You got to make sure that, you know, everything's folded nicely. And, mm-hmm. you know, there's a lot going on.
The make warm-up sure your pitches ball bags are coming. Balls.
Yep. So there's a lot happening. And then it's like, oh, you already threw it down. Okay. And you step in and you play ball. So, you know, it's happened to me where I've walked to the field without my mask. But as soon as I get there, I'm like, oh, I can't believe I left my mask in the car. But thank God I've never not put it on my face. And I think there's a couple of reasons why I have not forgotten it. And the first one is that it's under my arm.
Yeah, you shouldn't put it. It only leaves my hand sometimes as I'm getting situated. I'll hang my bag on the fence or put things there, get my water situated. And I might hang my mask on the fence temporarily while I'm doing that. But then as I step away from the fence, it is in my left hand. But I don't even put it in my... It feels weird. If I put it in my right hand for some reason, because I'm like adjusting something, it's weird. It's like, oh, what is this? What is this? Get quick to the left side,
Yeah. I feel that same thing. If you remember at the beginning of the season, I said I was working on this year not pointing with my mask in my left hand, mm-hmm. Which is a I don't think it was a point of emphasis, but it was a, hey, here's a mechanic.
Just a mechanic thing. Cleanup.
Yeah, kind of clean this up hygiene. A little bit. And so I've really been working on that. But you're right. The mask in your right hand feels weird. For sure. So, but anyway, yeah, don't put your mask down. Don't set it down. Some umpires that I've seen around will clip it on the back of their belt loop so that it's out of the way. Some will hang it on the fence, set it on the ground, you know, all of that stuff. It's like, please don't do that.
And so in your recommendation, where should that mask be during the plate meeting if it's not on the fence or on the ground? Where should it be?
Under the arm that's holding your lineup card holder. And I'm saying it that way because I'm right-handed, so I write right-handed. Mm-hmm. So I put it under my left arm because that's not the one that moves while I'm writing.
Yeah.
You know? So I put it under the arm that's standing still. I'm
very inclusive of you. I would have just said left arm all the time with no consideration for my southpaw friends.
Yeah. There's left-handed people out there too. They're the only ones in their right brain.
Ba-dum-tsh. Yeah, so that's so it should be there. Should be with you at all times, tucked under your arm.
Yep.
And then as soon as you are done, you put that in your hand.
Yeah.
And what I think's interesting too, to me, I should have it. I feel like that would not have happened in my case, is because the importance of getting that pre-pitch routine. So we've talked about before of like when you call the pitch, you stand up, you step back, you step in, you get down, all those things involved. And one of the things is you kind of get a feel for the fact if the mask is on your head or not. And one of the steps of that routine is a check of like the mask. If not, you put the mask on. The mask is in your hand. The mask is on your head now. And then, you know, there's a whole routine between I took my mask off because it was a fly ball. And now I put my mask back on. And so I feel like if you have a good routine there, that wouldn't have happened. You would have felt something's missing. Something's missing. Something's terribly wrong. You know, because I can't do my routine, but I can't figure out why even.
That's right. So in my routine, that's a really good point, Pete. My routine, if you think about for a second, we've had a hit ball. Something happens. The ball is hit, whether mm-hmm. it's fair, foul, whatever it is. The first thing that happens is the mask comes off. The second thing that happens, or while that is happening, you're running out from behind the catcher. Right? Mm-hmm. So usually out to the catcher's left, you know, unless the catcher went that way. And then, you know, you don't need to do that. We can talk about that another time. But you're going to get out from behind the catcher and you get the mask off.
Mm-hmm.
Do not get behind the catcher again until the mask is back on.
Mm-hmm.
So at the end of the play, you know, when it's all said and done and your partner is set in their new position, I'll do that in there. Listen to that mechanic thing you got going on there. When your partner gets to their new position or at least has control of the field. So sometimes in my second or third game of the day, I might not be sprinting to the C, but I might make it most of the way to the C and then get myself turned to see the field and mm-hmm. kind of indicate to the plate umpire, okay, I got it. And then so the plate umpire then can go and be prepared to get set again. And before you step in behind the catcher, put that mask on.
Yeah.
And then step in behind the catcher, set your other foot.
Squat, yeah, as you're walking into that box area, you should be putting your mask on.
And then the other thing for me, for the very first, especially for the first batter of the game. So in this situation, you know, we've got the the mask is sitting on the ground back there. What I do for the very first one is I'm going to look in my hand to see that my indicator has been reset for this very first batter of the game. Mm-hmm. Some people probably do that at the car. Some people do it at the end of the last game, you know, whatever it is. And I usually do as well, but I'm still just going to verify that.
Yeah, could have bumped, jiggled.
And if I look down there and I see my mask in my hand instead of just my indicator, I think I'm going to put the mask on, right?
And so, then the other, kind of the weird thing, just from a strange perspective, is I'm surprised no one noticed.
Pitcher
didn't, because it looks weird. So the pitcher should have noticed. If there was a base umpire there, I don't know the video enough to know if there was, but assuming they had a partner, that third base coach, first base coach, anyone know, a fan in the stands, like I would deadball this and run on the field.
Somebody be screaming. Something looks weird. Yeah. So I would agree with you with everything you said there, except the pitcher, because I can't tell you how many times I've seen pitchers throw while the hand is up. I've seen pitchers throw while there was no umpire behind the catcher, right? We're still, like, coach was putting in a sub and the umpire's over by the dugout and the batter doesn't pay attention and the pitcher throws the ball and you're like, what are you doing? We're not even playing ball yet, young lady. So anyway, so what else for a new one? I would say also new base umpires, often this gets forgotten as well in a two-person thing for NFHS. I don't think the manual actually says that you're supposed to go sweep the pitcher's plate off, but the NCAA manual definitely says that you do. Base umpire does it. U3 does it if you're in a three umpire system, which means you should always have a brush with you, right? Mm-hmm. So always have a brush.
And if you're on base, that is in your pocket, because when you're on base, you are not wearing ball bags on base.
Very good point.
Because this is for new umpires, so we're...
Yep. Very good point. Yeah, and then I had actually an opportunity the other day to umpire with a good umpire friend of mine, and I had bases and he had plate. And I noticed, like, in the third inning, I must not have been paying close enough attention. Right in the middle of the inning, he gets his rear end pointed out toward, the outfield, and he bends over and swipes the plate off with his hand.
Oh, no brush.
I'm like, oh, no. Okay. So next half inning, as soon as the half inning was over, I trotted in, and it's way more important for him to have a brush at the plate than it is for me to have one at the pitcher's plate. So
yeah.
I was able to loan him my brush, and he's like, oh, man. Oh, thanks. don't forget your brush. And an indicator. So make sure that you have a strikes, balls indicator out there in the field, too, to help your partner.
Yeah, and for mine, it's a little less important for maybe when you work certain games, especially, college games and most high school games. But I personally do like an indicator with an inning. So I have two of them. My favorite for how it works actually is one that doesn't have an inning. But when I work certain games, I do like the inning to be there because it's helpful for me to know and to keep track of what's going on. Because I'm not keeping a scorebook. I'm not keeping anything else.
Right.
It helps keep me in the game from that point of knowing. Because you do need to know when the game's almost over and you're at that scenario where it's top of seven or bottom of seven. If there's no scoreboard that's being lit up to tell you, sometimes in some of the middle innings, you can get lost of where are we exactly? Who's top? Who's bottom? Especially if it's not, like I said, a college game or something, you're standing in Tiffin. And so Tiffin's the home team. Most likely, 99.9% of the time, unless there's some other extenuating circumstance.
So I think we're getting out of here on time, but we're going to do a little bonus snip here. And the bonus snip is for any umpires out there that do NFHS ball and NC2A ball, and it's to talk about make sure that you reviewed the differences in the allowed conferences. So this just actually came up with a high school coach the other day, a very experienced high school coach. The plate umpire pointed out that's your second conference coach, and he did not like that because he had changed pitchers in between. So he was emphatic that his conferences reset for the new pitcher.
Oh.
Yeah, and so that's just not true. So in high school ball, you have three defensive conferences in a regular seven-inning game and one additional one per additional inning after.
Yes.
And by the way, those aren't additive. So in the eighth inning, you have one, not four if you didn't use any in the first half, or in the first seven innings, right? So you have three to use up in the first seven, and then you have one per extra inning. That's in high school ball. In the NC2A world, the coach has seven, or the team personnel, they have seven, and the players have seven as well. And you can use those however you like, except you can't have two defensive conferences in the same inning.
Without
changing for the team member, So without changing the pitcher, and I said it was bonus and we were out of time, but really, really quickly, if you're doing an NC2A game, they've already had a conference that inning, that half inning, do not let that coach cross the foul line unless they've told you they're changing pitchers. Mm-hmm. Because if they don't let you know beforehand, as soon as they step into fair territory, that's conference number two.
And they must.
And they gone. So,
oh, they're ejected
for it. They gone. Yep. So you don't want to do that. Don't let them do it. Do some preventative umpiring there. Preventative umpiring is something else for another episode to talk about with new umpires and actually some veteran umpires that could use a refresher on the difference between coaching and preventative umpiring. So let's put that on a ticket somewhere.
Yep. Pete. All right.
Hey, that's it for now. Thanks for listening.
Yeah. Until next time. Thanks for listening.